This is the Beat Inspiration Inc. podcast, episode number 9, brought to you by National Bank. Welcome to the Beat Inspiration Inc., a podcast featuring local businesswomen and entrepreneurs breaking the mold of the traditional business world. I'm Donna Saker. This episode, we're speaking with Christine Renaud of E180 about brain dates and using technology to connect people.
That's what we're doing. We're doing brain dates. So when we nail that concept, people know what dating is, and then it's like, okay, it's dating not for, you know, to find the love of your life. It's to learn something or share your knowledge. Oh, okay. So, okay, it's an online tool to have an offline, a face-to-face conversation just as a dating site.
As always, my co-host with the mostest, Devinder Gupta. How are you, darling?
I'm doing great, Donna.
Please tell our fans, who are you? What do you do?
My name is Devinder Gupta, and my passion is helping entrepreneurs transform their ideas into income. So I call myself a venture strategist, and I'm part of the team at AmplioStrategies.com.
We'd like to welcome Christine Renaud to the studio on the podcast. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now tell all our listeners out there, who are you?
So I'm Christine, as you mentioned. My company is called E180. So what we do is we help human beings to learn from each other in a new way. So our mission is to completely redefine what we mean by education throughout the world. And we do that through what we call brain dates, which are one-on-one knowledge sharing, face-to-face conversations.
How did this idea come about? Did you have a brain moment yourself?
Yeah, actually, I had many. So I'm an educator, so I was trained to be a teacher. And when I started doing my internships in schools, I just remembered my past as a young anarchist when I was 13 years old. And I was just struck by how we still teach our children the same way we did, 15, 20, 50, 100 years ago. And it seemed to be very irrelevant based on what I now knew of the world as a grown-up, as a 25-year-old. So it really kind of triggered this thinking in my head, like, what should be education and what is the rule of schooling and how can we create those environments where all humans can thrive, whether you're a child or an adult. And so I started studying alternative education and other ways of thinking about schoolings, which brought me to doing a master's in Boston, then being a podcast producer in New York in 2008. And that's when, as an educator doing podcasts on education in the United States, so I was working for PBS. It was just impressive to see with the rise of Facebook and Twitter that people were using social media more and more to kind of post cries for help when they needed to learn something fast. And as a podcast producer that was never trained in sound or radio, I had learned everything I needed from my musician husband and from, you know, networks and friends. And I was like, wow, that's agile learning. You know, that's how you learn, is just by picking somebody's brain and being challenged and decide to, you know, bridge the gap between who you are and who you need to be to overcome your challenge by basically asking around you and learning by yourself. So that idea really came from me as a learner, but also just observing as an educator how actually people were learning in the 21st century.
So what was the next step once you realized that?
Well, I was not a tech entrepreneur. I didn't even know you could actually be an entrepreneur. So that was the start of saying, like, okay, I can actually build a business. I had no model in my family of people building businesses. So just the, I think, developing your identity as an entrepreneur and as a social entrepreneur in my case, where I want to use business tools and leverage to actually transform education, which is a social, I don't know if it's a problem, a social field. So defining myself as an entrepreneur, defining, okay, what is my business? How do I stand if I compare to the startup community that was really emerging at that time, if I compare myself to educators, to social entrepreneurs, like, where do I stand as an entrepreneur in all those different, ecosystems? And then finding a business model, a co-founder, because I had this idea where technology was a tool, but I was not a programmer. So I needed somebody to believe in my idea and embark with me, which it took me about 3 years to do kind of all of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I remember meeting you, Christine, at the first Startup Fest back in 2011. and I was trying to understand what was your business. Can you share some of the evolution of your idea and maybe some of the pivots or adjustments that happened along the way? Because now you're being invited to all of these events, like in Cannes, the CC2 conference in Montreal, and different events all around the world. So what was that road that and some of the curves that led you there?
I think you have a great question. It's really interesting. So we started by being a platform that any citizens of a community of a city could use to meet people in coffee shops. So the first platform, the e180.com platform, was all about helping human beings to connect. The most popular topics were things around family, around technology, entrepreneurship, health and well-being. A mom who had gone through with her kids around the world for a year-long trip with her husband and the family, and who could share her knowledge how to structure, organize such a trip with another, family who wanted to do that. So it was very kind of rooted in people's interest. And the problem that we had there was that even though people loved it, people understood it, we were facing, I think, two problems. The collaborative consumption movement, even Airbnb was just starting. So, mm-hmm. this new way of thinking about how we relate to each other in how we live our life, how we, take care of our health, how we educate ourselves, how we travel, the rise of the collaborative way of doing all those things, it was just at its genesis. It was not as easy to talk about it. People didn't understand really. I think we were not really good at talking about it. We called it, knowledge sharing, one-on-ones, but it was like so boring. Mm-hmm. And then actually I was at South by Southwest, which probably people listening mm-hmm. will know. And I was waiting for my badge as a speaker, and I was talking about what I was doing probably. And I probably faced the same type of like eyes, like empty glaze that you gave me the first time I talked about it. The person didn't quite understand. And then he was like, oh, so you're kind of doing like brain dates. And I was like, yeah, that's what we're doing. We're doing brain dates. So when we nail that concept, people know what dating is. And then it's like, okay, it's dating not for, to find the love of your life. It's to learn something. You share your knowledge. Oh, okay. So, okay, it's an online tool to have an offline, a face-to-face conversation just as a dating site, So then it really helped people to understand what we were doing. So that was the first thing. But the second thing was, even though people loved it, we're so busy that people are not committed. Mm-hmm. it's if I have to choose between being with my daughter or working on my business or training for my triathlon or going for a coffee with somebody who I don't know, who might or might not be interesting, who might or might not even show up, mm-hmm. that's a big risk. So when we were approached by C2 Montreal to foster brain dates at an event, then it all made sense all of a sudden, because people at an event are captive. They're there for 3 days. They have nothing else to do. They want to learn and meet great people. So we're actually providing a solution to a problem people really had. So the shift in terms of pivot, I don't often call it a pivot, but the shift was to kind of take what we had learned in this collaborative learning approach and transfer it in a place where people didn't know they needed it, but they did. And mm-hmm. it really took off from there.
When was the moment, and I've asked all our fabulous entrepreneurs this, where you went, whoa, we have something here. Was there a pivotal moment when you thought, oh my gosh, this is taking off?
Yeah, definitely. And you live for that as an entrepreneur.
Sure you do.
And we still have them where we're like, I think they're a bit more subtle now, but definitely when C2 Montreal came to us and they said, can you do our B2B platform? And we said, well, we don't do B2B, we do peer learning. And they were like, wow, you're a bunch of hippies. Like that, it doesn't make any sense for the CEOs.
Nothing
that
wrong
will
with hippies.
Come. And I'm a total assume, like I'm assuming myself as a hippie, totally. then they trust us. They trusted us, and we implemented the brain dates. And in 3 days, the first time we did it, it was not really, you know, well implemented because nobody knew what the hell we were doing, basically. So, and we had about 1,000 brain dates. And if you were looking at how many brain dates we've generated since we were created, it was maybe, you know, 200 in 2 years, you know, over the course of like all those days.
Wow.
So it was just like, okay, we're really onto something. The right conditions are there for this thing to take off. And that was definitely an aha moment where we're like, we're not only generating revenues now, which was a first, but even in terms of impact, we've never had that impact on human lives. When you generate 1,000 brain days, 1,000 meaningful conversations within 3 days, all conversations that wouldn't have happened if we were not there. Mm. That was a big, definitely a very powerful moment for us.
Mm. Well, I know for me, my participation at C2, that was the highlight, was going to the brain dates, almost to the point where I heard that there was this great speaker and I wouldn't really care because I'm so involved in the conversations that I'm having, the one-on-one conversations. And now when I go to other types of conferences where there isn't that structured, or it's the structure, but also the invitation and the encouragement to talk one-on-one with people, when that mechanism's not there, I find that these conferences, they may be great, but to me, they're sort of boring.
Yeah, and that's a big part of the work we do is, and I have a hard time saying that word in English, but legitimizing the...
Pretty good.
Thank you. The all the different attendees or participants as valid content providers.
Yes.
It's not just the expert on stage who knows something interesting. If you failed, if you tried, if you lived, you know something that could be of use to somebody else. And so providing that validity and helping the event organizer to pass that message and craft that message to say it's okay if you don't attend a session. You know, the fear of missing out, it's not relevant because maybe actually the person who knows what you need to thrive is sitting right next to you. And that's what we do. We unveil this knowledge and make it searchable and help people to connect on the basis of what they can learn and what they can share.
I would imagine it would be very satisfying, and maybe you've even experienced this, Devender, on a brain date. Mm-hmm. when two minds have come together and they're having a conversation and you see the two of them having an aha moment, it must be magic.
Oh. We live for that. It's just so beautiful. And that's the thing. We have matchmakers on site. So we host the space. We onboard people because sometimes people are not tech savvy or they didn't read the 3 emails we send because they're too busy. So we're there to help them to make sense of it all. And we're there also to connect people, to introduce them to each other when they arrive. So it's not awkward because we always look better on our profile picture than in real life. So, you know, we're there.
So, true.
So you don't have to search for the other person. We're there to connect them, check them in. But so we're there also to hear all the life-changing conversations, you know, and not all brain dates are life-changing, but definitely when you know exactly what you'll be talking about and you have this human being that has a generosity of just sharing his or her knowledge with you, it really actually changes the way that you think about learning, about yourself as a valid, you know, as I said, the person that can actually propel somebody else. And you have these moments where we've seen people crying, we've seen people like staying in touch for and developing business relationships as well, or friendships. And it's something really, really powerful.
That reminds me of one of my favorite quotes. Pardon me. And I think it was Kevin Spacey who said it. When you finally gain your success, don't forget to send the elevator back down. Mm-hmm. And it's the way I try to live my life. And I feel like with your company, that's what you're trying to do. People who have had experience, who have visions and ideas and lend their expertise and their advice to people who don't really know where to turn or need that kind of light to be lit within them.
Absolutely. But there's also something about, and I don't want to use all the, you know, we talked about pivot and now I'm going to talk about failure. So we covered all, you know, the kind of cliche thing we need to talk about when we talk about entrepreneurship. But it's true that it's not just about, you know, it's not just about the expertise. We never talk about expertise. We never talk about being experts. It's more about sharing what you've learned through life, which is success and failure, and which is also, you know, mornings, which is explorations. There's all these ways that we develop as human beings, and all of these are valid if you're the right person who comes at a right moment for somebody who is on the same sort of path or quest.
What's it called? Kismet or something? Or serendipity? Or
serendipity, yes.
It's a great word.
Yeah, we say we engineer serendipity.
I love it.
In your experience, Christine, what would be a suggestion or a... or a mentor hint that you would give to other women entrepreneurs, especially those who don't come from a tech background, but they have this idea and they know that it can really change, it can change the world. What kind of a suggestion would you have for somebody like that?
I think it's probably the one I often give, but I really think that entrepreneurship is a path. It's a process. It's very much, I think I'm a mother as well. It's very much like giving birth and raising a child, you know, like you give birth and then it lives out in the world and then you have some sort of control, but not all control. And you're going to lose sleep over it and you're going to think about it and it will become something very, very central in your life and in the life of your family and friends. And it really takes a village to raise a business. So I think it's definitely crucial that you're in it for the good reasons and that you're tackling the thing that you care about the most and not wait for that thing, you know, not to fund one with the other. Like, okay, I'm going to make money with this one and then I can really do what I want. I think that's the biggest mistake. I think you right away, you have to commit to, you know, making money and, you know, getting the resources you need to have what it takes to achieve that vision and that dream that you have. But I would not postpone purpose. I would work on purpose right away and make sure that you're in it for the right reasons because it's a long journey.
I had an aha moment just now with her line. I'm going to steal it from you. Don't postpone your purpose.
Yes.
What a gorgeous statement.
I think it's the title of my book. Ah. I just found it.
It's just, I love it. I have goosebumps. What a beautiful thing to say.
It's a wonderful example of the kind of conversation in a brain date because I've had that experience too. Talking to somebody that I've never met before who comes from the other, completely other side of the world, the ice is sort of broken because we have permission in the environment to be really open with each other. And yeah, just listening to what the other person says and, yes, that's a piece that was missing for me.
Totally. And is that, I know, again, I don't want to use cliches over cliches, but that co-creation of knowledge is very powerful because you have an experience. I have an experience, but together we're creating something. And that discussion we're having, like right now, that's what's happening. You know, your questions are having me say things that I've never said before, I never even thought about before, but were inside of me. It's kind of like what Socrates called the maieutic. It's like the art of giving birth.
Yes.
It's what a brain date is. And I think it's what education should be. It's about like helping each other to give birth to our own truth and our own purpose and path, you know? So that's why it's so powerful and so magical is that I don't know you and here you are helping me to give birth. You know, it's kind of a really powerful relationship to have with somebody you don't know, but that's what happens when you co-create this new reality for both of you.
I absolutely loved speaking with Christine. And I said it during the interview, but when she said, you know, I think this whole series I've been talking to you about what my purpose is, and everyone says, well, your purpose is radio and speaking to people and inspiring people. And I completely agree, but I feel like there's something missing and I haven't figured out what it is yet. And I'm stressed about that. But she said, don't postpone your purpose. Now, I'm not postponing it. I'm just kind of in the process of trying to figure out what that is. And I think that you shouldn't force the issue and let it come naturally, because I think you'll know the moment when it comes.
Definitely. And what impressed me with Christine also is her persistence. As I mentioned in the conversation, I've been following her since I first met her in 2011 at the Startup Fest. And to see how she's been open to interacting with people to and getting clues, listening for clues that point her to the next direction of the of her business. For example, just that conversation at South by Southwest where somebody mentions the word brain dates and ding, something lights up.
Yep.
And she realizes that's another piece that was missing. And that's a big part of entrepreneurship is you build it piece by piece. You don't have to have all the idea at the beginning. You have to have enough to get you into motion. And then the next step will appear as you evolve.
I also like when she said being an entrepreneur or having your own business is like giving birth.
Yes.
It's kind of messy in the beginning, but then, you know, you sort of nurture it and take care of it and you watch it grow. It's brilliant advice.
Very much.
Inspiration Inc. is hosted by Donna Saker and Devender Gupta. Recording, editing, and production by Frédéric Bertrand. Web and IT support from Tanya Fazina. Research provided by Devinder Gupta. Our executive producer is Rob Kemp. Support for this podcast comes from the National Bank. You can reach us by email at inspirationinc@thebeat925.ca. And please, don't forget to rate us and give us feedback on iTunes. Inspiration Inc. is a production of The Beat 92.5 and Cogeco Media.